ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, Text 23. Aho
pati
yam
stana
kala
bhutam
jagam saya apayayat
api
asadvi lebhe gatim datri datri uchitam
sata
anyam kam
ba
jalum sharanam vijema Aho bhakiyam stana kala kutam jagam shaya payayad apyasadvi lebe gatim dhatruchitam tatonyam tangva dayalum sharanam vajema Aho bhakiyam stana kala kutam jigam saya payayad apyasadvi lebhe gatim dhatruchitam tatonyam tangvadayalum sharanam vrajema Aho, alas, Baki, the she demon, Putana, Yam, whom, Stana, of her breast, Hala, deadly, Kutam, poison, Jigam Saya, out of envy, Apayaya, nourished. Api, although. Asatui, unfaithful. Lebe, achieved. Gatim, destination. Tatri uchitam, just suitable for the nurse. Tata, beyond whom. Anyam, other. Tam, who else? Ba, certainly. Dayalum, merciful. Sharanam, shelter. Vrajema, shall I take? Translation. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful, and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord, even to his enemy. It is said that a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stock of poison. In his babyhood, he was administered deadly poison by Putana, a she-demon who tried to kill the wonderful baby. And because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know that the Supreme Lord, even though playing the part of a baby, was no one less than the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. His value as the Supreme Lord did not diminish upon his becoming a baby to please his devotee Yashoda. The Lord may assume the form of a baby or a shape other than that of a human being, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. He always is the same supreme. A living creature, however powerful he may become by dint of severe penance, can never become equal to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana because she pretended to be an affectionate mother, allowing Krishna to suck her breast. The Lord accepts the least qualification of a living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? Om Gyanachirmanandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshram Nitanyena Tajnai Shri Gurudeva Maha. This question is asked by Uddhava in ecstasy. How can you find anyone more merciful than Krishna? How can you find a better shelter for your life than Krishna? Because, and what is the evidence? Just look what he did about the destination for this demon, Putana. So Uddhava is revealing his ecstasy, and he's also documenting his feelings. Because bhakti is the most scientific phenomenon. It is the perfection of combining emotion with evidence. All the emotions of the flavors of love of God are based on the solid evidence of what Krishna does. Krishna's activities, Krishna's qualities are factual. Therefore, the emotions in association with Krishna's qualities and activities are unlimitedly extraordinary for the devotee. Lord Chaitanya described that the happiness exchanged between the Lord and his devotee in their relationship And in that relationship, many times the Lord comes under the control of the devotee. That happiness of the relationship is like an ocean of nectar into which both the Lord and the devotee dive in together. Now Uddhava is stirring that ocean and explaining, just see what Krishna is doing. How can we react otherwise? How can we have any other kind of emotion except accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the most merciful? Just look what he did for Putana. Now, this verse was also quoted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the glory of Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the Bengali is completely exquisite. Even today in the schools and universities in Bengal, they use Chaitanya Charitamrita verses as an example of exquisite poetry. One professor at IIT, India's premier scientific university, he was telling me after one program we had there, even today, Chaitanya Charitamrita, its language, its composition by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is just treated as the standard of literary presentation par excellence. And then, besides his own exquisite Bengali renditions, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has taken the verses of the Shastras, like Srimad Bhagavatam, the verses of Rupa Goswami, Pajavali, Lalit Madhava, so many books like that, and he's presented them as Lord Chaitanya spoke them. He's presented them as Rupa Goswami quoted them, or the other great devotees mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita quoted them. In this way, Chaitanya Charitamrita is a treasure house of the most wondrous Vaishnava expressions. Lord Chaitanya, he quoted this same verse that we are discussing now. And how did Lord Chaitanya present this verse? He said, this shows that when a devotee actually understands Krishna's qualities, when the devotee actually understands Krishna Tattva, the science of Krishna, then he will give up all other activities and simply take shelter of Krishna. And so he said, what is a proof? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Uddhava has documented this. And how did Uddhava document it? This is the verse. How can I take shelter of anyone more merciful? And Prabhupada writes, here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord, even to his enemy. In other words, if we have any doubts about, is there something more worthwhile to do with my life? Uddhava is dealing with those doubts. You can't find any better shelter than at Krishna's lotus feet, because just look what he did for his enemy. Now, what to speak of what will happen for a devotee? The Sanskrit here says, gatim, destination. Nebhe gatim dat. In spite of her unfaithfulness, she's asadvi, unfaithful, she's against the Supreme Personality of Godhead, impure. In spite of that, what was the destination that she achieved? She achieved dātli uchitam, a destination just suitable for the nurse. In other words, she got a position with the same flavor, the same rasa, as Mother Yasoda. She became a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan, able to treat Krishna with maternal affection in Vatsalya Rasa. Devotees have to be destination conscious. They have to be concerned, where is my life going? What is the conclusion of my life? I've been talking to so many devotees the past few days, and I have to say, I noticed the effects of demoniac civilization that we are living in now. Because we're coming from such a society, we should notice how our ability to mold our life according to a destination has been destroyed. And this is increasingly apparent for those younger devotees. Those of us who are older, we have to admit, many of us are admitting, that life in the 70s was basically like such a yuga compared to what's going on now. Most of us, we didn't do anything wrong other than meat eating until we were 18. Then we got into it. But nowadays, as soon as you're 13, you're into it. And so most persons under the age of 30 these days have never had a chance to form their bodies and minds in a healthy way, speaking from the material point of view, as a teenager. Their teenage years have been totally annihilated with vice since the age of 13. So you can imagine what kind of unsteadiness and instability this produces in character. In spite of one's best intentions, there are so many faults and disturbances packed into the body and mind when, since the age of 13, one has been wild. And the effects of this kind of lifestyle magnify in our inability to focus our life for achieving a destination. We don't even think about that when we're coming from such age of Kali horrors. All we think about, is how are my senses feeling now? How are my senses feeling today? But in terms of molding your whole life to achieve a destination that has been destroyed. And so you can see that people today, particularly, I have to say, they're under 30, under 35, their minds are all over the place. They can't pick out, this is my goal, and let me drive for it. Even that material determination of the conditioned soul has been destroyed. What to speak of spiritual determination? Generally, in the age of Kali, people are lazy about their spiritual self-interest. That's the general thing. But now you see that people don't even have the determination to carry on for a material goal with sacrifice and austerity. Everyone just wants to dissipate their energies, materially or spiritually, and just take what comes to them at the moment. How's my mind feeling now? I feel like doing this. I think this would be a good idea. Well, why not? And they just take off in any direction at the drop of a hat. This, that, the other. I feel this. I feel that. The ability to focus on a destination that is a result of sense control, a disciplined lifestyle. This is what we're offering in Krishna consciousness. I've noticed in my discussions with devotees that sometimes, often, they don't understand what they're getting in Krishna consciousness, because they're simply looking at their life here at Nidwarka as just something that's kind of feeling good right now most of the time, but some of the time it doesn't feel good, and then they start wondering, what am I going to do to kind of guarantee the good feelings that I may have now? And what am I going to do to get more good feelings in the future? And just, is it right for me, for my mind and senses right now? There's not much thinking that I need to mold my character. I need to formulate a spiritual identity. Therefore, I need purification. I need dedication. Is not that much of this kind of thinking. As a result of growing up in such a powerful demoniac society, there's not much thinking that I need to get myself in shape. I've spent years, at least in this lifetime, obliterating myself. Now I need to spend a few years at least trying to consolidate my spiritual fortitude, try to get myself together, so I can think properly. This is the great destruction done by society today. People can't think properly. They can't think What is my goal? How am I going to get that goal? No, their intelligence is bahushaka yanantascha, many branched. There's no ekeha kurunandana vyavasyatmaka buddhi. None of that one singular focused intelligence, not even materially. Everyone is just, oh, but my senses feel like this. I thought it would be nice. And this kind of felt good to me yesterday, so then I thought today maybe, you know, do a bit more of that. And everything is so impressionistic. Everything is very capricious and whimsical. And there's no mention that, you know, I've got to get myself together. I'm going to obtain what Krishna consciousness is offering. I've got to really work on myself. I've got some serious repair work to do. There's very little of that. That is a result of growing up in such extraordinarily materialistic circumstances, in which you're made to feel that your life is an expression of your whims and caprices. And the more you can express your whims and caprices, the more successful you are. People are even bragging now about living without a goal. It's considered to be a cool thing. Living without a goal in your life. People are writing books like this, and fools are buying them. That you can live wonderfully without a grand goal. Now, it doesn't mean you're aimless. It simply means you have many small, minor goals for your senses at particular moments. And you just go from day to day, kind of connecting to these minor, small goals for your senses. And in this way, you don't have to worry that your life doesn't have any overarching purpose or goal. It's not necessary at all. You shouldn't submit your life to such tyranny of having a goal. You should have the freedom to just glide in any direction you like according to how your senses feel at the moment. And in this way, your life is full. In this way, your life is creative. In this way, your life is inspiring to you. This is the propaganda that's going on. So when such people look at the life of a devotee, they think, just see how you've chained yourself to this goal of going back to Godhead. Just see how you've narrowed your options. Just see how you've restricted yourself all day long. Simply Krishna, 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 Krishna. You can't do this, you can't do that. You have service you're supposed to do. You have rules you follow. But people can't understand this. Why have you imprisoned yourself, shackled yourself to this goal? Now they said, even if it is a good goal, many people are willing to admit, okay, I have, you know, you want to be Krishna conscious? Whatever. I want to ski. I want to play baseball. You want to be Krishna conscious? I talk to many people. They talk like that. They're open-minded. Well, whatever. What are you? You're into Krishna? Fine. Yeah. I'm into Thai kickboxing. You know, it's all just, you know, just have something to tinker around with. But this giving of yourself completely to a goal, that's a bit much. It's all right that you have a little something, a little hobby to dedicate yourself to, but constantly Krishna, Krishna, Krishna? Are you sure this is not dangerous for your character? On the other hand, we have Uddhava, who's saying, look at the destination Putana has achieved. If she wasn't deserving of it, she got such mercy, and she's such a demon. Putana, she's known as Bucky also, because she's the sister of Bakasura, kind of heavy demoniac family. Bakasura, the duck demon, Bucky, the witch demon. And they're sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. Of course, Kamsa is sending them to their own deaths. And these demons have the ability to change their body according to a particular task they want to accomplish. Why would they change their body? Because they can experience certain powers in certain kinds of bodies. That's the way it is with material nature. Each kind of bodily form permits a certain type of power, certain type of ability. So the demons, they have these mystic abilities. You can even read about it in modern UFO and alien reports. The modern people, they don't know what to make of it, but they call this ability that maybe the aliens they're in contact with have, they call it shape-shifting. But that's nothing new for the devotees, because we're reading about it in Bhagavatam all the time. Regardless of what people they are experiencing, in Krishna book you get a whole string of shape-shifting demons. They're wizards, and they can make their body however they like for accomplishing a particular goal. Why would they change their body? Once again, they change the body because the particular form they take gives them certain powers which they wouldn't have in their regular form. Just like Putana, her job was to kill Krishna. So she took the form of an extraordinary, beautiful woman. Ordinarily, with her body, she didn't have that potency. In fact, when Krishna killed her, everyone could see she was a hideous witch. Huge, hideous witch. So she changed her body so she could appear to be beautiful. Now, it's very important to understand this point about how the demons change their body, because we don't want to think Krishna has to do the same thing. Krishna doesn't have to change his body to get certain powers. It's a very important point. We are body conscious in Krishna consciousness, but it's not our material bodies. We are conscious of Krishna's transcendental form. We should not think that when the Lord changes bodies, so to speak, he like drops one body and takes another body. No, it's not like that. The Lord's original spiritual form can transform into other forms of Krishna. So it's not that the Lord drops the Krishna body and picks up the Varaha body. If you think like that, it's actually impersonalism. No, there's nothing beyond the form of the Lord. There's nothing beyond the form of the Lord as Sansundar. But that original form of the Lord can transform, just like the deities. You should not think that Krishna has kind of dropped one form and, for our benefit, taken the form of Dwarkadish. No. The Lord's spiritual body transforms into the deity form. This is very mystical. This is why, in order to understand Krishna, one must be purified. Otherwise, these kind of things are inconceivable. But the devotee is allowed a glimpse into how Krishna does these things. Just like earlier, Uddhava has talked about the Lord through his yogamaya potency, he'll manifest his appearance in this world. And through his yogamaya potency, he'll withdraw his appearance. It's not that the Lord gives up his body when he departs from mundane vision. No. With his yogamaya potency, he causes himself to disappear to the vision of people. Everything is managed by the Lord's internal spiritual potencies. There's no giving up or accepting bodies as the conditioned soul does. Now, when the Lord kills Putana, he's demonstrating that even though you see me here as a baby, I've got the same potency as any other form of me. I don't have to change my body in order to experience an increase in potencies. Putana is the first demon the Lord's killing, and she's a woman. So sometimes it's said by the acharyas that the Lord closed his eyes before he killed Putana because she was a woman, and according to the Vedic standard, you're not supposed to kill a woman. And also, as everyone knows who's read the Krishna book, the Lord, he could have closed his eyes because he didn't want Putana to realize what was going to happen to her. He wanted her to keep on coming on with her so-called maternal affection. And he was going to kill her, but at the same time, give her the highest benediction of being his nurse in Gokul. It's not that the Lord was angry at Putana for himself. No, he was angry at her for having killed so many small babies, because Kamsa had sent Putana around killing all the small children, hoping that one of them would be Krishna. So she's going around doing mass slaughter of small babies. And so Krishna killed her to end her nefarious activities. This baby form of the Lord is the source of joy for the residents of Vrindavan, especially in the Vatsalya Rasa, like Nanda Maharaj, Yasoda, the elderly gopis. The elderly gopis had a chance to relate to Krishna as their son because they would take care of Krishna, baby Krishna, even though he's the son of Mother Yasoda. The older gopis in the village would also put their two cents in, so to speak, and they would be watching Krishna. They would report to Mother Yasoda, he's stealing, he's doing this, he's doing that. Mother Yasoda would say, well, should I take away his jewels so he can't see in the dark when he goes to steal butter? No, the older gopis told her, his body has such an effulgence, he'll light the place up and see what he's doing anyway. So in this way, the older gopis, they also were treating Krishna as their son. And the Bhagavatam says that sometimes the older gopis were thinking, if Krishna was really my son, I would take care of him just as good, or if not better than Yashoda. Now, the Lord always fulfills the desires of his devotees. So Krishna gave him a chance to actually treat him directly as their son. In the Brahma Vimohana Leela, the Lord expanded himself as all the cowherd boys that Brahma took. And in this way, each older mother in Vrindavan had the chance to directly take care of Krishna. So, in this way, the elderly ladies of Vrindavan, they're having Vatsalya Rasa, love of Krishna as parent, along with Yashoda, and of course, Rohini, the mother of Balaram, and Nanda Maharaj. In Nectar Devotion, you'll find a nice list of persons who evidence parental love of Krishna, and Prabhupada gives that list rank in order of intimacy. First is Mother Yasoda, and then you have the Vrindavan parental devotees like Rohini and the elderly gopis and Nanda Maharaj. And then you get out to Mathura and Dwarka, Devaki, Kunti. She also has this maternal love of Krishna's parent, and Vasudev. And then there's also Sandipani Muni. He's Krishna's teacher. So, when you read Nectar of Devotion, and it was Prabhupada's hope that we read Nectar of Devotion every day, you get a taste for how these devotees show real emotions on the most purified level of existence. The devotees are lost in parental love of Krishna. They don't acknowledge Krishna's opulences even though they see them. That's why we can say, so to speak, they're lost in their rasa. In Vrindavan, sometimes Krishna will show, well, all the time he'll show the most amazing things. But the devotees, especially those in parental relationship, they simply think, oh, he's our little boy, we have to take care of him, we have to maintain him. This is the predominant thing in the Vatsalya Rasa, maintenance of the Lord. If we don't take care of Krishna, what will become of him? Mother Yasoda, she would be in anxiety. Krishna's out too long playing, he must be hungry now. Or Krishna should come home, he's dirty, he needs a bath. Now Krishna is the supreme pure, but Mother Yasoda, she's thinking, he needs a bath. He has to be fed. Something has to be done. He hasn't come home. Or he's out stealing butter and milk products from other people's homes. What's wrong with my milk products? Why does he have to go to other people's houses and steal? I've got the best milk products. I've got the best cows. She had special cows reserved for giving milk products to Krishna, with special flavors coming from these cows. But this is parental love of Krishna. Even when she looked in the Lord's mouth and saw the whole cosmic manifestation, still she couldn't stop thinking, this is my son. She couldn't stop thinking that. She began to wonder, what is this? Am I deranged? No, I'm in good health. Are the demigods playing with me and showing me these things? No, I'm just an ordinary woman. Why do the demigods want to bewilder me? Maybe this is just the mystic power of my son. Anyway, he's my son. I have to take care of him. After Krishna killed Putana, Mother Yasoda arranged that Krishna be protected from evil spirits in the traditional way done in the villages. She moved around the tail of a cow, and she put on Krishna dust that had been kicked around by cows. She put on him cow dung. She washed him with cow's urine, all these things to protect Krishna, reciting mantras. She knew this is her duty, that Krishna must be protected. And Nanda Maharaj, he's watching for Krishna when Krishna's coming back from the pasturing ground with his cows. Nanda Maharaj goes up on the top of the house and looks out, and then he informs Mother Yasoda, here comes your son, just see how beautiful he is. He looks like this, he looks like that. And Mother Yasoda would give her report, yes, yes, our son Krishna, he's carrying these kind of paraphernalia, he's looking like this. They always say what Krishna is looking like because these are stimulations for ecstatic love. The body of Krishna, his bodily features, his sweet words, how he respects his parents, these are all stimulations for ecstatic love. Therefore, the Shastra is listing them. You find one wonderful verse in Nectar Devotion, how Mother Yasoda referred to the killing of Putana. She said, actually, it was just because of the prayers of Nanda Maharaj and I that Putana was killed. We prayed to Vishnu. That's why Putana died. And how was it that the Yamala Arjun trees came crashing down? Strong wind. That's all. And how was Govardhan Hill lifted? It actually wasn't done by Krishna. It's impossible for Krishna, a little boy, to lift Govardhan Hill. It was done by Nanda Maharaj. So that was her vision. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that the devotees who are situated in this love of Krishna, devoid of awe and reverence, even if they see the Lord's opulence, they don't consider it. They simply focus on their relationship with Krishna. Now, Putana has gotten that position in Vrindavan. She can taste that Vatsalya Rasa, even though she was a hideous demon. Krishna simply accepted. She's come to me as a mother. He accepted that quality from her. Of course, he killed her because she was offensive, but by her coming in contact with the body of the Lord, she became so purified that when she was dead, and the cowherd men were hacking up her body. It was so big they had to hack it apart in order to burn it. Such a wonderful fragrance came from the body, although she was a hideous demon. This shows there's complete hope for us. If we can somehow or other come in contact with Krishna, we'll become purified of our demoniac tendencies. And we should be thinking, I've got to get myself together. I've been obliterated by atrocious materialistic lifestyles. I've done myself in. I've done all the things that one should do if you want to annihilate yourself. I've done it. Now here I am in Krishna consciousness. What am I going to do? What's my destination going to be? Am I just here on a day-to-day basis? Well, it feels kind of all right today. Or am I here to go the distance, and am I prepared to do the sacrifices necessary to achieve the destination? Any questions or comments? Yes. On the other hand,
without knowledge, having knowledge, one can achieve true love.
Pure bhakti consists of jnana and vairagya. He's asking that he read Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that without knowledge about devotional service, you cannot get rid of your anarthas. But then on the other hand, he says he thought that simply bhakti in of itself without knowledge. Without knowledge of bhakti, one can achieve pure devotional service. So we're pointing out that bhakti is composed of knowledge and renunciation. These two components provide the culmination. Krishna is the goal of the Vedas. So through the knowledge and renunciation components of bhakti, you get the goal. The residents of Vrindavan are living with the goal. Now, in order for us to get to that level, we have to embrace the total package of bhakti, which includes knowledge and detachment. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is glorified. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is glorifying him. Let me offer my obeisances to Lord Chaitanya because he brought knowledge of Krishna consciousness, which consists of detachment from everything unfavorable, and of course knowledge about bhakti yoga. Lord Chaitanya brought both these things, and the result of these two components of bhakti is that you get to associate ultimately with Krishna. Once in Australia, Prabhupada was asked by someone, I heard this on tape, if chanting the holy name is sufficient for everything, chanting the holy name brings you all perfection, why do we need to read the books? And how did Prabhupada answer? He said, if your spiritual master says you must read, and you don't read, then this is offending the holy name, because you're neglecting the order of the guru. So on the one hand, you're saying, well, all we have to do is chant. But the spiritual master, in this case, the founder of Acharya, says, you must read my books. If you don't do that, then even though you're busy chanting away, you're offensively chanting. So we have to take the whole package. And the whole package brings about the result of association with Krishna, so much so that you don't even want to hear that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and you can't even notice. All you know is that Krishna is the most dearly beloved. Yes? Yes. Did Putana get the result of an enemy? No. Anyone who comes in contact with Krishna always benefits. Therefore, and Krishna has no enemies. Even those who think themselves the enemy of Krishna, when they contact the Lord, their situation improves. As you heard earlier, those soldiers on the battle of Kurukshetra who died seeing Krishna, they went back to Godhead. The others who didn't die seeing Krishna, they went to the heavenly planets. But those who died in the battle of Kurukshetra seeing Krishna, they went back to Godhead. So how can the Lord be said to have enemies when anyone who contacts him simply increases the benefit of their life? All right. All glory to Prabhupada.